The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
The Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, is with me in studio. Minister, you're welcome to the show. Tell me about this report published today by the Expert Task Force. It had been looking at expanding the role of pharmacists. What is it? What is it reported on? And what will it mean for patients?
We're going to do something quite radical, Kieran. We're going to introduce prescribing for pharmacists. At the moment, as your listeners will know, a pharmacist might be able to give you a repeat prescription. And we changed the law earlier this year so that they'll be able to extend a lot of prescriptions from 6 months to 12 months. But what we're looking at doing now, I set up an expert group last year. They've reported into me. We've launched the report. And the big recommendation is that we start on a journey now whereby pharmacists can prescribe. We're starting what we're calling a common conditions service. I'd like to see that up and running early in the new year. And essentially that's if you have conjunctivitis, if you have urinary tract infection, if you have a minor rash. They've identified 8 conditions to start with. At the moment, you might go into your pharmacist. They know what it is. They know that you're going to be back to them in an hour or a day or a week with a prescription from a GP. You've got to go into the GP. The GP doesn't really need to see you. And there's other people waiting to see the GP. You'll be able to get, the pharmacist will be able to give you the prescription straight away. That's the first big change. And then the report recommends that we go further. And it really is quite ambitious in saying that ultimately pharmacists would be independent prescribers. Now, there's various ways that can happen to begin with. It has to be done in a safe way. It'll have to be done in a phased way. Imagine a hospital pharmacist working with a team of people, making sure that you've got the right mixture of medicines while you're in hospital or in a residential home. You know, you might have elderly people who are on quite a number of medications. The pharmacist can do reviews and say, look, there's new medicines or this doesn't work very well with that. We can make this better for you. Or working with the GPs. GPs and pharmacists already work closely together. It will give more autonomy, more independence to the pharmacists. So who wins? Ultimately, the patient wins, right? Everything we try and do is make care better, faster and cheaper for the patient. So this gives them access in their village, in their town, to their local pharmacist. We tend to know our local pharmacists. Yeah. We trust our local pharmacists. They're very highly qualified. And this is about making sure that we can tap into all of their expertise, which we don't yet do.
So will this work in the same way that the GP system currently works in terms of registration? Would I have to be registered with my local pharmacist? At the moment, I don't. To be registered with any pharmacist, and my local GP can send my prescription to whatever pharmacy I like. But if we're cutting out the GP, do then I need to be registered so at least there can be some sort of database they can look back and say, well, this is the fourth time Kieran has been in for his kind of shingles rash. Maybe it's something else.
All of the detailed rules and the protocols are going to be put together now by an implementation group.
Okay.
However, the whole philosophy is access to healthcare professionals where you are, right close to your home. So let's say you're on holidays down in Dingle and you've got a UTI or you've got a rash, you have conjunctivitis. I see no reason, once the local pharmacist has had the training, there would be lots of regulation in place, lots of protocols in place. You should be able to go into them because you're on holidays in Dingle or Wicklow or wherever it is. You can't get to your own GP. You probably can't get into a local GP, but you do need that prescription for yourself or your kids.
Yeah.
And so I would like to see it.
But there would be a record somewhere then of me having got a prescription for a UTI so that, you know, medical records then exist for me and for that condition. That will have to exist now within the pharmacy system, won't it?
It will exist. The pharmacist will keep records and we'll be able to go further because we're going to be rolling out this patient app in our move to making Ireland a decent digital health country, which we're not. We're going to have a patient app and one of the first things that's going to have on it is our prescriptions. So in fact, yes, there'll be a record in the pharmacy, but there will be a record on our phone.
And how far away are we from that? If you're talking about this being up and running maybe by early in the new year, how far are we from an app?
Patient app is already being tested. We have several hundred patients in Waterford, maternity patients on it. And I want to see the app rolled out in the coming months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is about, I guess, exploiting and taking advantage of the fact that so pharmacies are so ubiquitous now compared to when we were younger, when there might have been kind of, there was, I think, 3 or 4 in Kilkenny, say, to give the example of where I know best, and now there's maybe 15 or 20. It also has the impact, I assume, of maybe lightening the load of GPs. Is that part of this?
This is exactly it. So the patient ultimately gains, the pharmacist gains, but the GP is in a better spot, because we know the GPs say they're out the door busy. Partly that's for very good reasons, because now they're doing free contraception, they're doing chronic disease management, they've access to things they didn't have before. So, you know, GPs can do more, they can provide more care. But yeah, what this will say, what this will mean for the GPs is the patients you have coming into you that you don't really need to see. The pharmacist is a highly trained healthcare professional. They can handle them, and you can focus on the more complex care. And while the number of GPs is growing, we're doubling the number of GPs, there are still towns and villages in the country and areas of cities where people are waiting too long to see a GP. And so this will mean less pressure on the GPs from the simpler cases, which will give them more time to see those people who really do need to see a doctor.
How difficult is that not to crack the GP shortage and the kind of paucity of services and resources? Because, you know, we've 2,500 practices in the country, maybe 600 odd of them are kind of have open lists. It's very hard to get registered with a GP. And I appreciate the point you make that there's ambition to kind of increase the number of GPs, but it's happening at the same time that the population is increasing, that the number of elderly in the population is increasing. I think 5% of over 65s are on 15 meds. And that's a good problem to have. People are living longer. We all welcome it. But the reality that GPs work kind of 50, 60, 70 hours a week in rural Ireland is no more the reality. You know, so all of these things, there's a sense, is there, in kind of running to stand still?
Yes. However, we're increasing the number of GPs quicker than the population is increasing. So if we look at the number of GPs...
But even that has been catch-up. You know, there's been a 30% increase in the population, say, in the last 20 years. There hasn't been a 30% increase in the number of GPs. It's a little like the housing conundrum. You know what I mean? You massively increase the rate of housing, you're only catching up to where we should be.
We are, but we're catching up very quickly. So for every GP who's retiring, there's two GPs entering practice. Now, as you say, the person retiring might have been working 55 hours a week. Maybe the person coming in is far more sensible and wants to work 40 hours a week. But nonetheless, the number of GPs per capita is increasing. It's increasing at a decent rate. To your point, Kieran, it is still going to take a few years to get to where we want to get to. But we're on the way. And critically, the interest from young doctors in becoming GPs has never been higher. Last year, earlier this year, I think it was, we had the highest number of applicants for the training places that we've ever had. So there is a ways to go. Like the access to GP issue is by no means fixed. We've made important progress. There is a ways to go. But because we're now doubling the number of GPs, that is going to resolve itself in time.
You mentioned kind of chronic disease management, which is one of the things GPs do now that they used not to do an awful lot of, or more manage in the hospitals. And, you know, when it was kind of rolled out into the primary care system, one of the reasons for it was going to lighten the load of hospitals. And what you did is you maybe lightened the load on some hospitals, you increased the load on GPs. How do you prevent the same thing happening here in terms of pharmacy having an expanded role, that you're not kind of shifting deck chairs in the Titanic? And I go to my local pharmacy and they say, well, actually the prescribing pharmacist is booked up now for the next week.
Yeah, it's a great question. We are definitely looking to shift where the patient goes. We're looking to make it easier for the patient. We all know there are pharmacies in every town and every village all over Ireland. I live in a small town village in Wicklow called Kilcool. There's two pharmacies. So we will be shifting care to the pharmacies, but we do need more pharmacies. And actually, it's contained in the report as well. Our goal is to double the number of pharmacy college places. We've already had strong expressions of interest from Cork, from Galway, from other places as well. Minister Patrick O'Donovan and I are working our way through that. So the long-term answer, if you like, is we double the number of pharmacy places. We make sure we have a lot more pharmacists. The good news is, though, plenty of people have said to me, I have to wait too long to see my GP. No one has ever said to me, I can't get access to a pharmacist.
The free contraception contract, how many GPs are holding out and haven't signed it? So the stories in the Journal this week about people, kind of young women being surprised when they were told they had to pay.
Yeah, I saw this yesterday. It was in the Journal. It was just brought to my attention. And essentially, young women who we have provided this for free for are being asked for like €130 after their consultation. That's not right. My strong suspicion is it is local clerical errors by administrative people within those GPs. But I've asked my department to contact the IMO.
Okay.
Just to reiterate to every GP, contraception up to the age of 35 for women is now completely free and nobody should be asked for money.
But it is an optional contract. A GP practice could say, and we're actually not going to bother sign that.
They could. I haven't the number, Ciarán, but the vast majority of them have,
University Hospital Limerick is currently closed to elective procedures. Now, there's exceptions to that when it comes to cancer care and other issues, but it's a pretty inauspicious omen for the winter to come when this happens in August, isn't it?
Well, this is happening. This is a planned reset. So what some people were worried in the region was that this was some knee-jerk reaction from the hospital due to overcrowding. It's not. I asked, and the chief exec asked, an expert group to go into the hospital earlier on this year, and it was the previous hospital manager from Waterford, and we know what success they had, the head of nursing in Waterford, and Dr. Fergal Hickey, who was an ED consultant. They produced a report for me and for the chief exec. The report was stark in terms of the things that have not yet happened in terms of reform in UHL. One of the things they recommended was a short reset, and what they wanted was the elective care, the less urgent elective care, to be paused for a short period of time to free up the beds, to get the flow moving. Now, critically, the clinical leadership in the hospital need to use this opportunity to bring in the new working practices. That has to happen. So I would expect a phased reintroduction of scheduled care starting in about a week.
Okay.
And I expect it to take a small number of weeks to get fully back. But the most
important... By the end of September, possibly? Back up and running?
No, sooner.
Sooner than that.
The most important message for people in the Midwest is this was a planned patient safety measure. And the reason it was done in August was because there is less pressure on the hospital to do this reset in August. We've also got 50 beds coming online very shortly in Nina, another 20 in Clare. So we really are gearing up for the winter in the Midwest.
The consultants working in those hospitals who are members of the IHCA, the Irish Hospital Consultants Association, today said the government are going to miss their inpatient waiting list target reductions this year. They're going to be up unless they say kind of something drastic is done by the Department of Health. Are those waiting lists going in the wrong direction?
The waiting lists are falling for the third year in a row. And in more and more parts of the country, the waiting times are falling from years to weeks or months. There are hospitals that are under pressure. And at the start of each year, for the first half of each year, for the last 3 years, we saw the waiting list go up. There is a cyclicality to this. The numbers need to fall for the rest of the year. Look, what I would say to the IHCA is they have a role to play here. They keep talking about these waiting lists like they're government waiting lists. They're not government waiting lists. They are the waiting lists of their members. It is their members. It is members of the public waiting to see their members. The IHCA called for a new contract. We put it in place. They called for an end to the 2012 pay disparity. That's done. They called for thousands more hospital beds. That's 1,200 have been delivered, 500 on the way, 3,000 more have now been planned as well. They called for a massive increase in the number of hospital consultants. That's done. And there's more coming. And so what I would say is we have amazing consultants around the country who are reducing the waiting times of their patients from years to months,
okay,
and in some cases, weeks. But can I just, and sorry for going on, Ciarán, if I could just say this, the IHCA could do something very useful. It could engage with its members and say to those who have yet to take the new consultant contract, which is designed to reduce waiting times for patients, to take it up. The IHCA came out against the consultant contract.
So sorry, when they say quite clearly, 74,700 extra patients will be added to outpatient waiting lists this year. You say, well, no, the numbers are wrong. Those numbers are actually falling. They're not increasing. And what's more, you guys could be doing an awful lot more to get them to decrease further.
I can't comment on their number because I haven't seen it. What I'm telling you is that this will be the third year in a row that the waiting lists fall. And I think a lot of our consultants really have stepped up to the plate. For example, here in Dublin, where we are, for a child who needed to go in to see an eye specialist, that child 4 years ago waited 2 to 3 years. They're now waiting 2 to 3 weeks. For a woman in Sligo who was referred in to see a gynaecologist, up until recently, she was waiting, believe it or not, Ciarán, 4 years to get in to see that gynaecologist. She's now waiting 4 weeks. these hip operations where people would have said, well, you probably have to wait 2, 3, 4 years for a hip operation. They're now happening in, you know, 6 weeks to 12 weeks. So the waiting times are falling. I would love to see the IHCA say to their members, you know what? We asked a lot of the government. The government has delivered a lot. There's more to come, but has delivered a lot. Mm. Now, we would like to tell our members, let's take up the new contract and let's get behind the push for productivity that is required.
Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly. Minister, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.